Since 1775, generations of Americans have fought for our ideals and our principles. American warriors secured the freedoms to create the United States of America.
They fought to end slavery.
They joined with allies to win two world wars.
They have responded with valor and honor whenever called.
And they have liberated more people around the globe than any military in the history of the world. Our all-volunteer forces of guardsmen, soldiers, sailors, marines, airmen, and reservists continue the mission begun at Lexington and Concord.
Less than 1% of Americans serve in our armed forces.
The least the rest of us can do is to pay attention and get engaged. This program is produced and broadcast for that purpose. It is presented live and worldwide
at 1041kqth.com.
To engage, call 520-751-1041. The American Warrior is on the air.
Rangers,
Rangers,
follow the way,
follow the way.
Here we go,
here we go,
here we go,
here we go.
C-130 rolling down the strip.
C-130 rolling down the strip.
Airborne Daddy gonna take a little trip.
Airborne Daddy gonna take a little trip.
Mission unspoken, destination unknown.
Mission unspoken, destination unknown.
Don't even know if we're ever coming home.
Good afternoon, listeners. Ben Bueller Garcia here on American Warrior Radio. We played that little intro in particular because our guest that's joining us here today, you've all heard the expression, the pen is mightier than the sword. Well, our guest today is an Army Ranger medic who is adept at the use of both. He just released his third book, this one titled First Train Out of Denver. In part, it chronicles a journey he took with his fellow Ranger, Marty Scovlin Jr., to raise awareness and funds for a program called the Gallant Few. You can find out more about that program by visiting gallantfew.org. As part of that journey, they traveled 8,000 miles across two continents and started out with only what they could fit in a backpack and $100 American. Their journey was a subject of a documentary, Nomadic Veterans, which won the Founders Choice Award at the 2015 GI Film Festival. Now, this trip is quite a story, but it's so often the case there's a story behind the story of how Leo Jenkins came to sell all his earthly possessions and venture off on a walkabout. So today you're going to hear about both and a lot more. Leo Jenkins, welcome to American Warrior Radio.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that introduction. I got a little bit of a flashback with that cadence run of some of the hungover PT runs early in the morning, so thanks a lot for bringing me back to those miserable moments.
Well, okay. it's live radio. What we can do. Now, let's start off with a little bit about you, Leo. You were originally from a little wide spot in the road in Arizona. I can't really pronounce. How do you pronounce that? I've never heard of it. What is that?
Oh, Phoenix?
Pahuddy?
Yeah.
Phoenix? Okay. Small town?
Small town, yes. Small town values. The traffic is not bad at all.
Touche. You know you're in Tucson. Now, why Army? And why did you decide to become a medic?
I was already working. I'd been working for about a year and a half as an EMT and firefighter north of Phoenix. After 9/11, it was kind of one of those gigs where I felt that I had already been given my American dream. I wanted to be a fireman since I was 6 years old. I had it. We look on the news, and at that time, we're seeing other 19, 20-year-olds getting ready to go into combat, and, you know, we went into Afghanistan, obviously, October 19th, 2001, I felt like I needed to go out and, I guess, kind of earn that American dream, the redemption of, you know, what happened on my birthday, my 19th birthday, September 11th, 2001, and I already had that skill set. I was already a working EMT, so it seemed like I have this skill set. Can I take this and use this to help out in this fight that we're now all engaged in?
Okay, now I've followed you. You write for Havoc Journal, which is when we have a regular guest from the Havoc Journal on the show. And I followed your writings over the course of time here. And I got to tell you, I wasn't kidding about the sword and the pen. You're a very good writer. And when someone reads the reviews about your book, not just your most recent book, First Train Out of Denver, but also your first book, we were chatting before the show began, that your first book, Lest We Forget, is still selling copies, and you published that in 2013. It's really sort of kind of a collection of stories, is it not?
Yeah, it was never really intended to be a book. I had a friend of mine who's a writer for SoftRep ask me if I wanted to write a story about a mission that I did as a medic in either Iraq or Afghanistan. I wrote it up for him and put it up. I didn't think anyone would read it, and I had hundreds of comments from people saying that they wanted more of that. So I wrote another story, and Again, it's kind of a collection of stories that's somewhat loosely tied together. And when I put it into a book format, I really didn't think more than maybe 50 or 100 people would be interested in it. I really just wrote it for my platoon and my company of guys that were, you know, Rangers at that time and place, and just so they can have something on their bookshelf to show their kids, like, you know, hey, you know, Daddy did this or Grandpa did this. You know, this is similar to, you know, my experience. And I was absolutely shocked at the number of people. I'm still shocked at the number of people that pick up that book and enjoy it.
You shouldn't be, and we don't have time. That's 3 books ago, so I want to spend more time on your more current books. But that there's some really powerful stuff in there. And tell us about, real quickly, we've got about 2.5 minutes before the first break. Tell us about a section you talk about in the book where you were stateside and you received a page in June of 2005. Tell our listeners what that was about.
So we had very limited information at the time. We knew that there was some guys in special operations, is really all we knew at the time, that were compromised. We were actually getting ready to deploy, I think in about 2 weeks. Our company and our platoon specifically was kind of the next in line to go. And so we pretty much got flexed and made to deploy a lot sooner than we were intending. Our bags were already packed. We all knew that we were going to go, but this having happened, they needed more resources. There was already units on the ground after, you know, the mission operation Red Wings kind of went awry, and you know, there was other Rangers and pararescue men and Green Berets and Marines on the ground there. We came in to kind of augment that force and ended up spending about 4 days in the Konar province in the mountains doing what was personally my longest combat search and rescue mission.
And for our listeners who aren't familiar with that, that was, you know, the subject of Lone Survivor, and then of course Extortion 17, correct?
Right. Yes.
And it's interesting in your book you refer you and your team are asking the questions, well, why do they have to bring us from the United States to do combat search and rescue? Well, the answer was because the first team they sent in was shot down with total loss of life, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Something I'd like to read for you just before we take the commercial break, because I think this is an example of some of the powerful writing, and it has a particular connection for those of us here in Tucson. My stomach sinks as I find out that our Chinook will be following the identical flight path of the one that was recently shot down. We sit on the airfield waiting for darkness to fall over the distant mountains that will soon become the proving ground for our young platoon. While we wait, we see a group of A-10 pilots getting ready to take off. As if they knew exactly where we were about to go, they gave us a strong thumbs up from the cockpit. Members from each of the different branches of the military love to give each other a hard time, but when it comes down to it, there's a very deep level of respect for the job that others do. We didn't realize it at the time, but these men would be our salvation once we hit the ground. It was evident by the gesture that they gave us from their cockpit that they had a great deal of respect for the job that we're about to do. Folks, this is your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. I'm joined live in studio by Leo Jenkins, a Ranger medic, and a very, very accomplished and entertaining author. Stick around, going to be good. We'll be right back. Welcome back, folks. Your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, here on a very, very entertaining American Warrior radio show. We're joined live in studio by Leo Jenkins. Leo is a former... Am I allowed to say that? Marines never retire. What do Army Rangers do?
Yeah, I haven't ranged in a while. So former
free range. Now he's a free range Ranger.
I'm a free range human.
Yeah, okay. But also a fantastic author. He's written 3 books. His latest is The Last Train Out of Denver. We were very fortunate to catch him on his way through Tucson on his book tour. Leo, some very powerful stuff in your first book talking about your actual experiences as a Ranger medic. Deployed, and I think in there you referenced, correct me if I get the numbers wrong, but you said in some cases your team was doing 2 or 3 missions, is not the right word.
That's appropriate.
Per night.
Not every night, but our Iraq deployment in 2006, it was pretty common. I think 90 or so missions in a 3-month period. So on average, it'd be average about 1 a night. But yeah, there'd be times 2 or 3 a night.
Wow. Well, and I tell you, the one thing I really is near and dear to my heart, and part of the reason that American Warrior is on the air in the first place, is to educate and inform those that never served. So your next book and some of your writings on the Havoc Journal, your next book on Assimilation, A Ranger's Return from War, from the publishing page, some wars don't end, some scars don't heal, and some bonds can't be broken. Your second book was published in 2014. It saddens me, and it's maybe kind of hard to say this, but what you discovered upon leaving the United States Army was some trials and tribulations that you never, I'm guessing, expected.
Oh, no, not at all. I mean, I fell into a fissure when I got out, and I sad to say, but I think my story parallels with a lot of guys. You don't really understand the level of disconnect that you're going to be faced with in the battles that you're going to be fighting that kind of compiled, right? So you have these hundreds of missions that you end up going on, but you don't really ever have time to process any of those things because it's always on to the next one, on to the next one, on to the next one. And you get out, and all of a sudden you're the best support group imaginable, all the guys that understand because they've been through that. Well, you've now disassociated yourself from them. You've removed yourself from them. They're still in the fight. They've got all the, you know, more combat to worry about in front of them, and now you're left there trying to process all of these things on top of the fact that there's a lot of people in this country that don't really understand how valuable and resourceful people coming out of an environment that like that can be. So, you know, you struggle to find work, you struggle with relationships and things like that, and all those things kind of compound. And, you know, I think a lot of guys, myself included, I just didn't have the tools to effectively deal with that assimilation initially.
What you faced, Leo, though, borders on the ludicrous. And frankly, it's, like I said, the mission of this radio is to inform people, but the circles I run in, for example, I've got a client who would hire veterans all day long for every job because he knows they're disciplined, he knows they'll show up on time, he knows they'll pass, you know, a drug test. But you, correct me if I'm wrong, but you returned to Phoenix and you submitted 160 job applications, not a single callback.
Not one.
And we're not talking you're applying to be the CEO of Intel.
No, I applied at Jamba Juice, and they didn't call me back.
And you could not get a call back. Well, you might have been overqualified.
But as you know, as a waiter, I actually had in an interview, the gentleman, the manager of this restaurant that will remain nameless, asked me if I had ever done any serving before, and I made the joke, well, does serving in the military count? You know, and he's like, no, I mean like tables. And,
wow.
And so I that was the first interview that I ended up getting after about 160 of those applications got turned in, and I obviously didn't get that job. I ended up using my network, and one of my good friends who I served with in two of my three deployments, his mother was in a position to be able to hire, and it was because of I connected back with my veteran network, and that's where I eventually was able to find employment.
Well, and that's, it's interesting. So, I love the way you write. So you got me all choked up here, Leo. Come on. I've had movie stars on here, and this interview scares me the most. You say it only took 2 months and 160 rejections to make you officially become a disgruntled veteran.
Yeah, that's about right. That's when I went into what I call my downward spiral, I believe, in that book. I had a couple of them. I was, you know, medicating with alcohol, and just really, very, very self-destructive in that period, because again, I didn't have the tools. I didn't know that I needed additional tools when I got out of the military. I thought, oh, I'm going to get out, you know, as a ranger medic. I had, you know, the responsibility, the health and well-being of 185 guys under me. I had, you know, millions of dollars worth of equipment that I, you know, had to be responsible for. I'd done all these missions and graduated from all these schools, and I just assumed, you know, that I'd get out and somebody would see value in that, and I'd immediately have a job and things would be okay. And I didn't really plan for, any of that that tribulation.
Yeah, you know, I believe, and you've learned this over time, I'm sure. But in my experience, so often one of the challenges is translation. A lot of us don't understand. For example, my brother was former OSI, and when he got out, he sent me his resume, and I read it, and I said, John, this all looks impressive. I have no idea what you're saying here. I mean, if you're General Schwarzkopf bodyguard, just say that so I can understand. And, you know, one of the common lines that's used is, well, if you're an Army sniper, how do you translate that into a private sector job? Well, there's ways you can do that. But I believe in the power of storytelling. Tell our listeners about, because to me this is the ultimate ridiculous situation, tell our listeners about the first aid class you took and you were required to take in college.
Yeah.
Now, keep in mind, folks, this is an Army Ranger medic. Okay.
It was actually being taught. They didn't have anyone pretty much qualified to teach it. The person who was stepping in for the semester was, I believe, a music teacher at the university. It's in the book.
Well, medicine and music, they both have
M in it.
Yeah, okay.
But there was a lot of, let's say, inaccuracies in the things that was being taught. And I remember a couple times actually looking over to my classmates and being like, don't write that down. That's actually incredibly inaccurate.
No, that's not good enough, Dale. Yeah. We gotta go.
someone in the class asked what a contusion is, and the teacher, not knowing, didn't to say, I didn't know, I don't know. She responded, it's when a bone is sticking out or something like that. And I literally looked around the room. Don't write that down, please. I can't. And the thing was, I couldn't. That was the third class. It was a 3-credit-hour class. So I think it was like 3 or 4 hours once a week for 16 weeks. I was paying to be there, and I'm like, I can't sit through this. I ended up leaving that university. I never got the degree. This first aid class and another class that was just as silly. But, I mean, I'd already shown proficiency in all these things. I was actually a first aid and CPR instructor for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I showed them all of that, but it was all in the military. And the school just, they were like, no, it doesn't count because you did it in the military. So
I tell you, if that was in the medical field, that I don't know what the educational equivalent of malpractice would be, but it sounds like that teacher qualified.
It was tough to swallow, and to the point where I just couldn't do it anymore. I literally just stopped showing up to the class.
Wow. Okay. Now, what have you mentioned you kind of went into a dark period there, but what have you learned, from since then? And you've got in some of your writings on the Havoc Journal, you talk about, you give advice to other veterans. You talk about the power of your Rolodex, that's one of the best assets some of the veterans can have, reaching out to other veterans out there who've got skills and who've got contacts.
100%. Right. You know, you just came from, one of the best fraternities, the best fraternity in the world. The connections, the relationships that you have are phenomenal. Guys that would have died for you, they want to be there for you. You just have to reach out. You have to stay connected with those people. A lot of folks, myself included, will isolate themselves, and I think that's the biggest mistake that we make. You know, there's so many events out there. The Ranger community does Ranger Breakfast in every major city, pretty much, where the first Saturday of the month you get together and just get to hang out and have coffee and eggs with guys. And what a cathartic experience, you know. Even if you don't feel like anyone else in the world understands you, you know, going and having those talks with your brothers in arms, and it's not only helping you, it's helping them. And you know, if you're again looking for work or you need help moving or something like that, those are the guys that are going to be there no matter what. You have to make the effort and reach out and talk to them.
Do you find in your former line of work, just because of the nature of the mental discipline, that to some extent some veterans become their own worst enemy? It's kind of like, go it alone, I can do it by myself, that impedes perhaps some of their progress out in the civilian world?
That's always an interesting concept, right? Like, you know, oh, I can take this on. I got broad shoulders. I accomplished all this. I have, you know, this much experience in combat and all these things, so I can do this, I can do this, I can do this. But what people don't really realize a lot of the time is that you didn't accomplish any of that on your own. You were a part of one of the greatest teams, right, ever assembled, and that's why you were able to accomplish those things. And it's not to devalue the things that you've done. It's just that, to keep that into perspective, you still have access to that team. Those guys still want to help you on a regular basis. You just have to stay connected and be realistic and pragmatic in the sense that all those great things that you did in the military, you didn't do them on your own. Mm-hmm. Right? We work better as a team. Every special operations unit knows that. Every unit in the military knows that. Nobody does it alone. There's no John Rambos out there. It's a team thing.
Well, that's a whole other subject we're not going to talk about today. Folks, the guest is Leo Jenkins. Leo, when we come back from the commercial, it's interesting the parallels, because the Gallant Few, the website or the nonprofit that was the nonprofit that you all raised money for in your next segment of your life, parallels a lot of those concepts you brought up. Folks, the guest is Leo Jenkins. You can find out more at blacksidepublishing.com. You can find his books on Amazon and see his stuff on thehavocjournal.com. There's your host, Ben Bueller Garcia. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Who expect to reap the blessings of freedom must, like men, undergo the fatigue of supporting it. Now, back to the American warrior.
Walking through the desert.
Walking through the desert.
It's hot and it's dry.
It's hot and it's dry.
I can't stop moving.
I can't stop moving.
Because I don't want to die.
Because I don't want to die.
When up jumped the scorpion.
When up jumped the scorpion.
From behind a rock.
from behind the rock.
He said, hey there, Ranger.
Hey there, Ranger.
Get off of my block.
Get off of my block.
Well, then the point man stopped.
The point man stopped.
And then he drew a grenade.
And he drew a grenade.
He said, hey there, Bug.
Hey there, Bug.
I'm a one-man raid.
I'm a one-man raid.
Well, then he pulled a pin.
Then he pulled a pin.
And then he let it fly.
Then he let it fly.
He hit that old scorpion.
Hit that old scorpion.
Right between the eyes.
Right between the eyes.
Folks, that's just a little something special. Leo, you were smiling there. You were smiling there a little bit. It's a family show. We can't play those other cadences. Welcome back, folks. Your host, Ben Bueller-Garcia. I'm joined live in studio by Leo Jenkins. Leo is a free-range Army Ranger medic, former medic, and he's also a great author. He's written three books. We were just very fortunate to catch him on his book tour here with the Stop in Tucson. His latest book is called The Last Train Out of Denver. You can get that on Amazon.com. You can find out more about it. Check out Blackside Publishing. Leo, this book, well, I don't even know where to begin. You were in a point in your life where you're kind of just wandering the world. At which point, you know, we talked about your challenges with assimilation. At which point did you say, you know, I'm going to sell it all and just become a sophisticated hobo?
I made a promise to a friend of mine who was killed in Iraq in 2007 named James Regan. And all the rest of the guys who never came home, that I would do everything in my power to take advantage of life and to live a happy and full life. And I kind of, I feel like I kind of built myself into a corner where I wasn't fulfilling that promise. And it was really, there was like this aha moment that I really needed to make a big change in order to honor that that promise and that commitment that I made to those guys. Who don't, you know, they were kind of robbed of the opportunity to live, you know, a full and happy life. And who am I to throw mine away and not being happy? So, again, it just kind of clicked. And I was like, I'm going to sell everything I own minus a single backpack. My first destination, I ended up moving to Costa Rica. I owned a successful gym in Denver. It was one of the things that went along with everything else. And moved to Costa Rica, ended up winning the Latin American Open for the CrossFit Games.
Wow.
Came in first. Yeah, I think it was about 6,000 competitors that year. So I advanced to Santiago, Chile, where the regionals were. And when I was there, my good friend Marty, he Skyped me. He's like, hey, man, you want to go on a trip? And I was like, yeah, of course, whatever. He's like, you want to know what it is? And I was like, nah, I don't care. I'll meet you in Denver in a couple weeks when I get down
free
there.
Range.
Yeah, free it's range. All good, man. Yeah. Like, it involves traveling. We're going to do something good for a veteran charity. That's all I need to know right now. And so I linked up with him. He kind of gave me the idea that he had, and we kind of bounced some things off of each other and solidified it, and then took off from Denver midnight sometime in June of, I think, the summer before last, and tried to stow away on an old coal train and, you know, ended up making it to Eastern Europe, Slovenia, actually, by the tick of a midnight clock 3 weeks later. We started with $100 and... So yeah, from there I continued those travels, and I traveled. His wife was 7 months pregnant at the time when he was doing this, so he had to beat feet back to the States as soon as we completed our mission. And I kind of moseyed through Eastern Europe and went to Russia, and then traveled across Thailand, and then got a van and traveled across Australia, and then traveled across New Zealand and Fiji, and went to Hawaii and then Alaska. I had a goal for the longest time to drink a beer in all 50 states. Those were two of the four remaining. I ended up buying a van. I gave myself 24 hours to find and buy a vehicle, whatever it was. I was just going to drive it.
Now, was this pre-Craigslist or?
This is Craigslist. Okay. Yeah, I was okay. On Craigslist. It was the second thing I test drove, and I ended up in Uvita. It's a Darien Gap in southern Panama. Some 20 months later, so. Yeah, just a lot of movement, but what it's done really is it's given me a lot of time for introspection, a lot of time to communicate, not just with veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan and this country, veterans of the Korean War, the Vietnam War, veterans from Germany, you know, our allies, and hearing how their government deals with returning from Afghanistan, how their military handles it. I have now good friends in the Danish Army and German Army and, across the board, and just being able to have these conversations on a global scale has, you know, really brought a lot of insight to my life, and it's helped me out in a lot of ways, not just with writing, but it's highly cathartic.
Now, this became the subject of a documentary, like as that I mentioned, was an award winner at the 2015 GI Film Festival. 21 days, what, about 8,000 miles total you covered? And you're raising money for the Gallant Few. At the end of the day, do you remember what the number was, how much you raised for the Gallant Few program?
It was over 25,000, under 30,000. I don't have the exact number. Yeah, it was somewhere between $25,000 and $30,000. $5,000 of which was because I offered to get a tattoo of someone's corporate logo if they donated $5,000, which I have on my leg here. I didn't know what it was going to be. I knew.
And you can't mention them because they're not advertiser on American Warrior Radio. Okay, and
it's okay.
Yeah, it's radio. They can't see it. Yeah.
But yeah, it was. It wasn't just about the money. I mean, the money I know helped them out a lot. But really, it was about us creating awareness for assimilation. Issues, right, with the veteran community, and that's really what Gallant Few handles. That's what they do, and they do a phenomenal job at it. So we got to be on, do a lot of radio and television and be able to get that message out, and that was really the big benefit.
You know, it's interesting, Leo, I see, as an outsider, as a civilian, I start to see parallels, and it's interesting, I'd mentioned off the air that we had Sebastian Junger on the show several years ago talking about his documentary, The Last Patrol. And he's written some, I don't know if you've had a chance to read some of his stuff, but he's written some very powerful stuff about assimilation historically. And for example, how the Native American tribes would reassimilate warriors when they came back from battle. And then he compares to how we don't do it in the United States here, on a regular basis. One of the interesting quotes that I pulled from one of your interviews, Leo, though, is someone said, well, why are you doing this? And your response was something along the lines of, well, we're Rangers, we're men of action. What kind of action can we take to help other Rangers or other people in the military? And so you went on this, I call it a walkabout.
You know, I don't think that you have to do something so grandiose in order to make a difference. I think that there's a lot of little ways that people can help out. As little a thing as, you know, giving your buddy a phone call, you know, just to check up and see. But at the same time, I think Marty and I are both pretty bold in the way that we do things, and I said, hey, why not? What's the worst that's going to happen? You know, we fail completely. We, you know, barely get out of Colorado. At least we tried. I think, you know, it doesn't have to be, you know, some grandiose thing. You know, you don't have to walk across the country to help your, you know, your fellow veterans or to raise awareness. You just have to do something.
And I'm glad I'm doing it because I couldn't walk from here to the end of the block without passing out. So I'm doing it here in the studio. But, you bring up a good point. Context is so important. When you and Marty were traveling, to a great extent, you were depending on the kindness and the compassion of others and context. If a poor man lets you sleep on his couch that night, in context, how is that relative to if a billionaire gives you $1,000? You know, to some extent, the poor man's helping you out more.
Right.
I mean, that's all for everybody to judge. But what did you? Was there a very odd, or what was one of the oddest things that you guys encountered on the road? And from his look, it's a family show.
Yeah, I'm kind of going through the files here and trying to think of something that's maybe. Yeah,
we can skip it. I'm just glad to be in an Army Ranger. You know, as I say, in the Navy, they call it being a stowaway. And I don't know if the Rangers say, hey, hopping on a coal train is just hitching a ride, because that's still not completely legal.
It's pretty illegal to do it. We actually, when we first initially tried, we got we made it into the back car, and the engineer found us. We'd been sitting there for 2 hours waiting for the train to take off from the train station. And so we called the police, and we got pulled out of the train by the police. It was kind of a mission failure immediately.
Mm-hmm.
We told him what we were doing, and, you know, he wasn't going to arrest us at that point, but he also wasn't going to let us back on the train. So we had to walk to a gas station, try to hitch a ride, all these things, and eventually get to Kansas and found our way onto a train and stuff that fortuitously let out right at a gentleman's club. And we went and had a libation or two. So.
We'll leave it at that, Leo.
Leave it at that.
Folks, our guest is Leo Jenkins. He's a Army Ranger medic, also a very accomplished author. His latest book, Last Train Out of Denver, you can find it on Amazon.com. Leo, in our last segment here, I want to do a little kind of rapid fire, full audio, if you will. One of the quotes that I found interesting from your writing at thehavocjournal.com, you talk about recognizing that I volunteered as a Ranger, fully knowing the hazards, and this is in the oath, correct?
Yes, the Ranger Creed.
The Ranger Creed, recognizing that I volunteered as a Ranger, fully knowing the hazards of my chosen profession. As you matured and spent time out in the world, you you came to the realization that that was not necessarily, you thought the hazard was the hazard of being killed, but you came to the realization that that might have something to do with the weight of those who have been killed.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys deal with some form of, you know, what it's kind of called survivor's guilt.
Okay.
That's a part of the job. You know, it's something that we take on. And you know, I think it's about perspective, right? I've more and more now through the process of writing, again, it's highly cathartic and this introspection, you know, you start to realize that, you know, yeah, a very small percentage of our population serves in the military. I think it was like less than 0.5% during the global war on terrorism, and less than 12% of our total population are veterans of, you know, any time period. And you look, and there's this like antipathy that occurs. It's like, well, I had to shoulder all these things, and you don't understand. And, you know, it kind of boils you. But then after a while, you start to realize, at least it took me a while to realize, that that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a good thing that a lot of our citizens are in many ways ignorant to the things that we have to go through. That means we're doing our job correctly. That means that they're not having to shoulder that. And that's the reason why our military's there.
Okay, very powerful stuff. We'll be right back. Hey, if you'd like to chat with Leo, give us a call. We're live in studio, 751-1041. We'll be right back.
My daddy served in the Army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard. Till the day that he died, he wanted my mother, my brother, my sister, and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free.
If you want to discuss those who serve the red, white, and blue, dial 520-751-1041. Now, back to the American Warrior.
Okay. Welcome back, folks. Your host, Ben Bueller Garcia, here on American Warrior Radio. It's always a good sign, Leo, that it's a great show when the time flies by. Our guest is Leo Jenkins. He's the former Ranger medic. He's got three books on assimilation of Rangers returned from war. His first book, remind me, lest we forget, is his first book. His latest book, Last Train Out of Denver, you can get them all on Amazon.com. If you'd like to learn more about his stuff, you can visit havocjournal.com. He writes some little things on there. It's sort of a, I don't want to say it's a blog, but it's a collection of stories, mostly veterans, right? Correct, Leo?
It's
or
a veteran perspective, for the most part. It's not all veteran authors that contribute there, but it's a kind of a cool think tank. You know, there's some perspectives that you might not get otherwise. And but the nice thing about, since the inception of Havoc, there's pieces that the founders, the editors don't agree with, that they still publish because they want to have different opinions, and to generate conversation is really what that's about.
And that's why I enjoy it. It's by no means an echo chamber.
No.
I mean, there's lots of different opinions, and folks, you know, sometimes the civilian world thinks that all veterans have got a parallel thought process or political philosophies, and that's just not at all the case.
No, as Nick Polisano from Ranger Up has said, you know, we're a, you know, a cross section of the population, but we're so many different things, you know. As far as being a veteran is concerned, you know, there's a lot of different types of veterans, and so resulting, we have a lot of different opinions on, you know, politics and foreign service and these things. So it's a good kind of collection place of those kind of thoughts from intelligent, well-spoken writers.
Now, just to share one of the, I took this from one of your pieces on Havoc Journal, and so our listeners can really, not that I should have to emphasize that you're a great writer, but let me just sort of take some excerpts from one of your recent pieces in Havoc Journal. You start off by saying there's no place for humanity in war, and there's no place for war in humanity. War is not for man, it is for cannibals. When the victor of the game played is decided by which side brings more death upon the other, we create an existence outside of the parameters of civilization. To affix rules to such a scenario is contemptuous and often only done by those who themselves would never dare engage in such acts as the intentional mutilation of another human being. There is no civilized way to remove the soul from a thinking, feeling, living, loving, breathing thing, regardless of how strict the rules of engagement. Cast away the pretentious nature of so-called civilities and send those cannibals to feast. Cease with the spurious concept of a noble conflict or take direct opposition to its very existence. But do not tell the killing man how to kill. For he is the one who swims in the ocean of those decisions while stones cast from those upon the shore. The actor of or assignment of the killing of one man for the sake of anything other than direct personal protection is, as such, the homicide of all humanity. If we are marked to fight, let us shed the constraints of such rules and let the battle commence. If we are to mitigate the act of mutilation, let us be done with war and all the hell it creates. That's some pretty powerful stuff.
Yeah, thank you. That's the first time I've heard somebody else read my words to me. I'm kind of taking that in as well. I recently, that's a somewhat older piece, and I still stand by all of it. I wrote another a piece recently called What's Worth War, and really breaking it down that in my opinion, that really the thing that we should, the primary thing that we should, only thing that we should ever fight war for is for peace,
mm-hmm.
is to create and instill peace so that people can, you know, live a prosperous and happy life. It's not that I don't believe that war has its place, in humanity. It's one of those things where it's very hypocritical, though. You know, hey, I want you to go and I want you to kill other people in pursuit to instill peace in this environment, but I want you to do it in this very specific way. And if you go outside of those parameters, then, you know, there's going to be consequences. And it's just, I don't know, it's like if you're going to, let's show everyone how ugly war can actually be by taking the chains off the dogs. And I think that we would probably fight in fewer wars that don't need to be fought in if people really saw the inhumanity of it.
Yeah, it's a messy business. And I think that, there again, that's where you parallel some of the stuff Sebastian Junger has written about. You know, if we're going to be, well, and even, Scott Faith and some of the other, either be at war or don't be at war.
Exactly.
But I never cease to be frustrated at the continued deaths of the boots on the ground that aren't boots on the ground. No, that's a political discussion. We're not going to go there.
Sure you don't want to get into politics?
Yeah, I do. Just we don't have time today. One other thing that was very interesting to me, I told our listeners you're adept at wielding both the sword and the pen. Also, another interesting piece you did, you're both a warrior in the sense of this show and a gladiator. And you wrote a little short piece highlighting the distinction between the two.
Yeah, I think that the way that we use our words is very, very important, right? Being specific, and there's a lot of crossover, and people use words incorrectly. And maybe just because I'm an author, that's something that bugs me. Maybe I notice it more because I work with words. But the distinction between being a gladiator and a warrior is something that I kind of take. It bugs me a little bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
We call our professional athletes warriors, and you know, it's not to take anything away from them. They're not warriors. They're gladiators. They're there for spectating purposes. That's not the warrior's role in society. And so it's kind of to misdefine who they are in that particular role. Now, I do know guys who are both. Good friend, Nick Navarro, is a professional fighter. He was also an Army Ranger before that, and the guy can claim to be both a warrior and a gladiator.
Well, just up the road from us in Phoenix, Pat Tillman.
Absolutely.
One of the best examples of someone taking off the gladiator armor and putting on the warrior armor.
Absolutely.
Okay. One other thing interesting, you did a great piece called On Being a Veteran, and you just sort of cite some of your, I don't want to say your frustrations, but interesting to me, Leo, in the, you know, I'm going on 100, 150 interviews, and you really get a mix of veterans, some who just don't want to talk about it at all or don't feel comfortable talking about it or just want to avoid it. But your philosophy is, yes, absolutely we should talk about it. That 99% out there who never served needs to hear these stories, needs to recognize on a daily basis the sacrifices and the implications of what we're sending these men and women off to do.
Yeah, I'm always more than happy to talk about my service and obviously the time after. All that I think I would ask, and anyone else who would be willing to open up and to share those scars, those emotional wounds, is to just be attentive and respectful when somebody is. Those are very, very deep emotional issues that guys are bringing up and sharing with you. And you know, if you're unversed in that world, it is. It's just one of those things that you should take advantage of that any chance you can, but also be very, very respectful and never be prying. And to our veterans, you know, you should. You know, I've always looked at, like, you know, you're carrying this giant stone around, and every time that you get to share some of those experiences with someone else, it's like chiseling off a little piece of that stone and handing it off, right? We as a community, as a society, as a nation, can all shoulder the burdens of war. You don't have to have gone to war to help shoulder that, but to attentively listen and be compassionate about that story and allow that veteran to chisel off the little piece of that stone and hand it to you, so now you can carry that around as well and eventually, you know, to dissipate the weight of that boulder on your back.
Do you think that if all of us had, particularly civilian world, had more skin in the game, whether it's attacks, I know we've got draft, but we haven't exercised. We haven't used the draft in a long time. Because I agree with you. I believe the entire society needs to bear the burden.
To some extent, right? I was saying it before that a part of me feels very accomplished that there's a lot of civilians that are somewhat ignorant to what goes on in combat. You know, obviously it would be nice if more people like knew the difference between the Army and the Navy, you know, like little basic things, right? Like
minor.
That's not really like, you know, that shouldn't be too much of an issue. But, you know, I don't need my nieces knowing, you know, about combat, you know, about the nitty gritty of it. You know, I chose to shoulder that. I volunteered for that. That's mine, but I'm proud to carry some of that weight. I think, so that they don't have to, but at the same time, I believe that, you know, I believe that it is our responsibility to kind of shield and blanket, you know, the society from some of that. But at the same time, be willing to speak on it.
Okay, one thing real quick that you and I both share. What should people do during the national anthem?
Oh.
Shut the heck up, right?
If for nothing else, just be quiet. At the absolute bare minimum, if you don't want to put your hand over your heart, take your hat off and just be quiet.
Wonderful. Folks, the guest, Leo Jenkins, his book, Last Train Out of Denver. You can find his stuff on Amazon.com. Check out AmericanWarriorRadio.com. This podcast will be up. Check us out on iTunes, Stitcher, the Nowherecast. Until next time, listeners, all policies and procedures are to remain in place.